Ladies and gentlemen, welcome you all to Drive to HR, the number one internet daily radio show for the HR professional. And as we kick off the new week, the new beginning, let's roll with a fantastic guest, a very friend of mine, Sarah Williams. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. Glad to be here as always.
Yeah, welcome back. You have been on the show many times, but we know a lot of things have changed in your life, in your career, so we can't wait to hear all those awesome things, awesome news that you are about to share. So, yeah. Sarah, why don't you kick off the show by telling our audience who you are and what you do?
Okay, I am Sarah Williams. SPHR, I still feel like I have to say that because I only recently passed the exam. So Sarah Williams, SPHR, I am the director.
Congrats.
Of thank you. Thank you so much. I'm so glad that that's done, and I plan to never do it again. So it's wonderful. But I am the director of human resources for Safe Streets USA. We are one of the largest authorized ADT dealers for home security systems in the United States. We have we do business in 30 states now and growing. So very excited to be on board here. I've been in place for just about 4 months now as their director of human resources, so this is a new role for me. In addition to that, I am a blogger and at the Buzz on HR. I've been writing at the Buzz for over 3 years now, and I'm also a contributor at PerformanceICreate.com with those fantastic group of individuals over there, and so I get to do great things through that writing as well.
Wonderful. So as we begin the show, as I said, new week, new beginning, but for you, it's a new job. Exciting news, right?
Yeah.
Exciting journey.
Yeah.
So take us through that transition stage. How was that transition, your job search process, and how did you land this position and all the exciting news?
This was kind of an unexpected change for me. The last time that I met with you guys, I was working for a different company and was generally happy with what it was that I was doing and where it was that that role, you know, had me. I had only been there for about a year and a half when this position kind of fell in my lap through recommendations and referrals. And, you know, they made me an offer I couldn't refuse as far as that was concerned. And so I made the decision to make the change. The biggest thing for me was that I was feeling out of balance in terms of my work life and the demands of home. I was traveling extensively, and the size of the staff compared to the size of the organization was askew a little bit, and so it just, even though I was the director, I wasn't feeling like I was directing. There was still a lot of day-to-day practitioner in terms of what I was doing, so I wasn't getting those strategic elements that I wanted and needed. And so this role came along and offered me that, and so I made the decision to make the change. You know, it added a additional commute, and, you know, you just give up all the creature comforts of what you've become accustomed to and decide to start over again. But I'm absolutely glad that I made the change, and, you know, I'm just excited to be in the place that I am now and doing new and different stuff.
Exciting. So what are some preparations that you might have done, right, before you get into a new job, some of the preparations that makes you successful in probably the first 3 months or so? So what are some preparations that you have decided in your mind and then did, and then it is working for you, so that it will help our audience, those who are joining to a new job or a new role, that will help them?
I really focused on just trying to get an understanding of the organization and the work that we do. That's really been my focus for the first few months that I've been here, getting to know the people and the work that they do and how it's done and some of why it's done, so that going into the new year, I can start to plan and make recommendations for how we can change and improve where it's necessary. I didn't want to come in and just, like, you know, I know everything and I'm so mm-hmm. fantastic, and so, you know, I'm just going to change everything and make everything, you know, the way that I think it should be. That's like the dumbest thing ever. And I just that just doesn't work. And so it was really important to me to not make a lot of unnecessary change in that first 90 days or so. Now I've got a few months under my belt. I've traveled a little bit because we have remote offices in Florida and in New Jersey, so I've been able to visit those offices and meet with the teams, get to know those individuals, get to know the folks here. I've been out in the field and got to see an installation from start to finish. I've spent time in our call centers reviewing the scripts and the things that they do in relation to our customers. I've spent time with our back office teams figuring out what they do and just how the work flows from one area to the next and back around again. So now I can sit down with the rest of the executive team and start to say, okay, here's what I'm seeing, and here's where, you know, we have the greatest level of improvements. Let's set some priorities around the stuff that needs to be done, that we want to get done, that we'd like to get done, and then, you know, start figuring out how we get it all done. And that's really been what my focus has been for the beginning. And I would recommend that for anybody when you're taking on a new position, is to take some time to observe. So often we dive in and we just want to work. A lot of times when you're coming into new positions, it's been vacant for a while and they need, you know, results right away. And you have to figure out a way to do that, but never lose those observational elements, because if you just dive right in and start working and don't take a moment to look around and survey the land, then you really don't, you're going to miss opportunities to make those recommendations, and then you're going to have to stop later on in the midst of work and go back and do those things. So it's better to do that up front and plan your way up front.
Absolutely. So you kind of talked about your position, how being a newbie at an organization, how to prepare ahead of time. So let's talk about the other side of the coin, about the employer or about the HR itself, right? We do the onboarding, but being a candidate, being a new hire, what do you recommend to those employers out there who would probably wanting to, you know, make that first impression, not just first impression, though, but making the life of a new hire that much comfortable enough to stay in the organization for at least the next 90 days, and then the longevity as well. What do you recommend to those employers, how to do the onboarding in a much more effective manner?
It, you know, my onboarding process here was very simple. We have a paperless paperless system that we use for that, and so most of the paperwork things were all done even before I got here. Because I was coming into a director's position, a lot of times there just is not a handbook, a orientation for how to bring somebody on at that level. And I'm not even necessarily sure that there should be, or that I would recommend, you know, creating one. I think when you hire somebody in management and senior management levels, they need to come a little bit with their own playbook of what it is that they want to get done. You know, there were a lot of things that I took away from my interview process, so I knew what the hot button items were based on what we talked about during that time period. So I had an idea of what it was I needed to be looking out for and the types of things that I wanted to do, and I just started to kind of structure my own plan of what I wanted to learn based on what we had talked about. Mm-hmm. And I checked in with my supervisor to say, you know, help me set some priorities in that. But I at least had an idea coming to the table, because there just isn't going to be a structured orientation for somebody at that level. Hopefully your organization isn't experiencing that much turnover at that level of the organization to need it. So, but when you get into more of the entry level and those sorts of things, I think that's where your onboarding and your orientation program becomes that much more important. You really have to do everything that you can within the first 30, 60, 90 days to give that person a clear outlook of what the culture is, and not the culture that you pretend that you have, but the culture that really
Absolutely.
Is within your organization, how things work and get done around here, and be honest with them about what's good and what's working and what's not so good but is still working, and what's not so good and that we think we're probably going to have to change, you know, at some point in time in the distant future or the near future. But be honest and, you know, upfront with people once they start working as to what those things are. And then from there, you know, making them feel a part of the organization by making sure that they have access to the resources and the people and the things, you know, that they need to be successful in their position, if they're going to be trained, whatever that looks like, and making sure that they're being partnered with individuals that are going to help them to be successful, and having a structure within that to know, okay, this is what we're doing the first week, this is what we're doing the second week, and sharing that with the individual so they don't feel like they're roaming around willy-nilly with no real idea of why this is being done or if there is a structure at all. You know, review that with them, let them know what the learning objectives are, get their feedback so that you can share that with the decision makers who structure the orientation, so that when changes have to be made, you have that data, you know, all of those sorts of things. That's where you can really create a good experience for the individual and some takeaways, you know, the organization can use to help to make them better.
All right. You know, while you were talking more about that, my mind was getting into the question of culture fit, because we being an HR professional, we focus more on the culture fit aspect. We talk about it a lot. We write about it a lot. But when it comes to being a candidate, from your perspective, how much of the time you took enough to evaluate the organization that you chose right now, is going to be a culture fit for you, and how did you evaluate that?
I asked a lot more questions about what was going on in the organization and in the department that I was taking over in this role than I think I have any other time before, primarily because I wasn't really pressed about getting a job. It's one thing when mm-hmm. you're looking for a position and you're not employed or you're really, truly unhappy with where you're working. That wasn't my life. That wasn't what I was dealing with. So I had the luxury of being a little bit more choosy about what it was that I was doing, and to ask some questions that would make the person on the other side of the table sit up a little straighter than normal. Because a lot of times we forget that while they're interviewing us, we're also interviewing them, and we have to make sure that the place that we're going into is going to be a good fit. As human resources professionals, we in general are trained in how to ask questions. And somewhere along the line in the interview process for jobs, we just kind of abandon that skill set. Mm-hmm. maybe because we think it's disrespectful or that we're not, you know, entitled to know that information. That's crap. You know, if you're going to be coming into an organization and expected to make a difference and have impact and add value and push the organization forward and all of those things that, you know, human resources is often asked to do, you got to know the real deal of what it is that you're dealing with. And probably not your first go round of interviews, but definitely when you start getting to the final stages of your interview process, and that usually, you know, 2-3 weeks, a month, whatever it is before you leave one place and come to another, that is the opportunity for you to definitely be asking and probing into what the nitty-gritty is, what's that lump under the carpet that we're sweeping stuff under, so that I know what it is that I'm walking into. The other thing I think that's really important that sometimes we forget to do, either as interviewers or as interviewees, is that we don't really walk around the places that we're interviewing at before we go to work there. We 9 times out of 10, you go to an interview, you sit in a really nice office or a really nice conference room. You know, they're offering you, you know, cake pies and you know, pony rides in order to, you know, impress you and show you that this is such a great place to work. But if you make a left turn and you go a little bit further down the hallway, you find, you know, people chain the cubicles and it's really, you know, an unhappy situation. So it's important to, again, at some point take a look at the environment that you're working in. Look at how the offices are set up, where people are working, what it looks like, and pay attention to what it feels like as well. You know, I can remember coming here and walking around, and people's cubicles were decorated, and the break room had lots of, you know, pictures and
wow,
snacks and, you know, like stuff. And you're like, oh, wow, okay, you know, versus you walk into the break room and it's like, make sure your dishes are clean. Don't be leaving forks in the sink. It's like, oh, okay, people mad. So making that distinction starts to, those are the things that start to tell. You walk in and you see cubicles, the offices are, everybody's got their doors closed, or, you know, nobody's looking up, or there's no pictures or artwork or color on the walls. You know, those are start to be the things that are indicative of something maybe is not quite right in the culture. Now, maybe you're the type of person that isn't impacted by that kind of thing and it doesn't really bother you. But if you are a person who is sensitive to that kind of stuff, which I know I am, if you're someone who's sensitive to that kind of stuff, then you gotta pay attention to that. Because if you, even something as simple as going into the restroom, a lot of times will tell you, is the restroom clean? You know, I hate going into restrooms and seeing signs about what you should flush and what you shouldn't flush. Like, what in the world? Why are we doing that? You know, I don't need you to tell me where to put my disposable items. Like, that's not nice. Mm-hmm. So, and if there needs to be that kind of communication in a way that's kind of, you know, that's abrupt and kind of rude, then you have to question what's going on here. And whether or not this is some place where you feel like you can grow and thrive and have impact. So those are the things I would say to look out for when you're interviewing. But I think, you know, the biggest place where we, especially as human resources people, we give up so much of our power and our ability is in the interview process by just not probing and asking questions to get to the heart of why is this position open? What do you expect me to do? What is it like to work here? We just forget to do that because we know how competitive the job market can be. We know how hard it is to get our resumes to the top of a pile and then to be the person that is sitting in front of another person that we want to talk to. And I think so many times we get so caught up in not screwing up that opportunity that we forget to ask all that other stuff.
All right, so let's give a big shout out to our audience. I can see a ton of tweets on our Twitter stream and a few callers on our drive-through HR board. So if you guys want to ask a question to our guest, you can dial to 347-996-5600, which you have already did, and hit 1. Please make sure you hit 1 so I will know you want to ask a question. Or you can tweet a question on our Twitter stream on our hashtag DTHR. We will be able to pull that up and ask Sarah. And check out her blog, The Buzz on HR, with tons and tons of information right there. So, Sarah, you being the leader of HR right now, the director of HR position, which is a senior position right now, and you're being well known in the HR community, going to SHRM conferences and speaking at various avenues. So my next question is about change. You know, we normally talk about HR being the change agents, right? But what's your thoughts on how can we lead the change?
There's a lot of talk about change. People don't like change. They don't. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody likes change. We want things to change and stay the same at the same time, which is insanity. We know it, but that really is what we want. Because change is difficult and it's uncomfortable. So it's not easy to be a change agent in the midst of all of that, because it's not even comfortable for you. For me, how I think I've handled it and I've tried to approach it is I don't get too committed to any one idea or any particular way of doing something. You know, 1 + 1 = 2, so is 3 - 1, so is 4 - 2. So, like, there's always more than one way to solve the equation and get the answer. And I can't always assume that the way that I figured out how to do it is the only way or the best way. And even though it's the best way this year, things in the environment may change and it's not so good next year, and I have to be open to what else is possible. That is not an easy thing to do. It's something that I've really had to practice over time. I suggest a lot of, like, reading. Blogging has helped because it really keeps me accountable. I can't talk about this stuff and then not do it in my own organization every day. That would be really hypocritical and bad.
That's true.
So I have to try the stuff that I'm talking about doing, because if I don't, then I'm a liar, and I won't be a liar. So I want to try to make these things work in my day-to-day practice. It makes me a better practitioner. It makes me a better blogger. It makes me a better speaker to be able to say, I've done this and it's worked. Here's what I learned from it. Here's what didn't go so good. You know, that adds credibility and credence and guts, you know, to what it is that I do when I'm not at my desk. And that's important to me. So I try to look at change from that perspective, take it as a learning experience and as an opportunity to grow and to be innovative and to do something different than how everybody else is doing it. And when you take that perspective, it's a little bit exciting and not as daunting. But it's not easy, and I definitely understand why people fear change and fight change, because it's just uncomfortable, and you never quite know if you're doing it right or if it's working or if it's not working or if it comes out how you intended it to. There's just so many, you're out of control, you know, in those change seasons, and it's not a fun feeling. And so you just have to figure out how you make it okay, and, you know, take it one step, one day at a time.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, talking about uncomfortable changes in life and work, you had a fantastic article up at PIC, that is performanceicreate.com, if you had a chance to go to their website, check it out. Sarah has a fantastic article on domestic violence, so, and dealing with domestic violence victims in the workplace. So what are your thoughts, and what do you want to communicate to those out there who are going through a domestic violence or who might have gone through a domestic violence but didn't have the courage to speak up?
Oof, that's heavy. well, you know, the PIC, POV, and we do those periodically. The Performance I Create contributors will see a hot topic that's going on in the news, and we'll say, you know, we want to weigh in on this. But, as you know, when you're contributing to a site and you've got multiple readers, you know, your calendar gets set and it's kind of set, you know, and you can't really do anything. So when the situation with the NFL and Ray Rice came up, we were all kind of talking about it. And so October, we were fortunate, has 5 weeks, so it gave us a chance to slide this POV in there without doing too much damage and disruption to our normal posting calendar. And so myself and Chris Fields and Chris Ponder and Dave Ryan all wrote pieces pertaining to domestic violence. Mine came from a little bit of a different perspective because I am a domestic violence survivor. I was in a bad situation, you know, at one point in time. And so I know all too well the struggle of Janae Rice and what it is, you know, that she's going through and feeling in the midst of all of this. But then as an employer, looking at the Ray Rice situation and the NFL's response to it, you know, I was just teetering back and forth on how to feel and what to post about that. So, you know, I made the decision to share my story and what I felt like were good pieces of advice for employers to use in dealing with employees who may be in dangerous domestic situations, just to support the victims in trying to put their lives back together and move forward.
Yeah,
so,
no problem. I just tweeted that link right away to our DDHR audience. So if anyone out there, they can check it out too.
Yeah, it's a difficult topic to discuss, and I was shocked and surprised at the response, you know, that I got from that, because I wasn't. You always write things and you don't really expect people to read them or respond to them, but I got overwhelming, you know, response and personal messages on all of those things, and that was just amazing. And I've had organizations reach out to me wanting me to work with them to review their procedures for dealing with domestic violence and violence in the workplace, which was just something that I just had no idea would come out of that. So it's just been incredible, and I'm really thankful to the PIC team for allowing me to do that.
Well, you are very humble and courageous to share that story to all of our audience and to through Performance I Create to everyone, that we were able to, you know, relate to you. We were able to know your story and how did you sort of overcome the situation. And by now, I mean, throughout this scenario, I think there was a hashtag on Twitter why I quit and why I stayed, where people have shared their own perspective, their own stories, which kind of helped all the women out there, not just women who are going through the domestic violence, everyone, every gender out there, kind of given them a courage to speak up, not just hide and go through the situation and just tolerate it, but take an action on it. Well, Sarah, thank you so much for joining with us.
Time out.
Yeah, time out. See? So, well, we have about 15 seconds left. So where can our audience connect with you and find out more details about what you write on your website?
You can catch my blog at thebuzzonhr.com, or you can find me at performanceicreate.com. You can follow me on Twitter at thebuzzonhr. I'm also on Facebook at thebuzzonhr, and you can connect with me from there on my LinkedIn and my personal Facebook and all those, my Instagram and all those other profiles. So thank you guys for having me again, and as always, and hi to Brian and William, even though they're not here today.
Oh, thank you so much, Sarah, and it's been a pleasure having you over here. I'm so happy that we were able to connect again and had a chance to talk on Drive Through HR. And
thank you.
A wonderful rest of the day to everyone. And this song is for Sarah.
Thank you. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Clap along if you feel like happiness is the truth. Because I'm happy. Clap along if you know what happiness is to you. Because I'm happy. Clap along if you feel like that's what you want to do. Why?